On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we get you caught up on all of the transactions we've missed here over the last couple of weeks. Munetaka Murakami going to the White Sox, Wilson Contreras to the Red Sox, Jeff McNeil not in Queens anymore, a whole lot more. Good, the bad, the ugly. Guest host Danny Wexelman. Jordan Schusterman's not here. Danny Wex is better. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that celebrates Nabil Crismat's birthday on December 25th. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Danny Wex. Danny, did you know that Nabil Crismat, the major leaguer whose name sounds the most like Christmas, was actually born on Christmas?
I don't think I knew that, but it doesn't really surprise me that, number one, you know that fact. Big Jeopardy guy over here. And number two, that exists in our world. How lucky are we?
Humans have lived for thousands of years, and we get to live at the same time that Nabil Crismat was born on Crismat. That's enough Crismat talk for this podcast. We are going to focus heavily on Mr. Munetaka Murakami, who signed with the Chicago White Sox last week. It's been a minute and a half since we did a show. Jordan remains off this week. Good for him taking a breather.
Good job, Jordan.
But let's begin with our opener, which is the Sox getting Murakami. After weeks of hubbub, years of hype, and very few rumors, Munetaka Murakami, one of the most accomplished players in the history of Japanese baseball, has signed a two-year, $34 million deal with the Chicago White Sox, God's team, the Pope's club. Now, there are a lot of different directions we can go here. I think that there are really two main stories in my mind, Danny. There is the fit of Murakami with the White Sox, and there is the contract, which is significantly smaller than anybody anticipated. I went through all the projections from before the offseason began, and almost everybody had it over $100 million. Kylie McDaniel at ESPN was the low guy, and he had $580 million. Okay.
Wow, okay.
MLB Trade Rumors, who we love and respect, had $8,180. We do not project contracts here because Jordan and I are cowards.
Yeah.
Where do you want to begin? Do you want to begin with the Sox or do you want to begin with the contract?
I want to start with the contract because jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Any team could go get a guy for that amount of money. All 30 teams could afford something like that. The Pirates could afford something like that. If the Rays wanted to be really crazy and find a creative way, they probably could have brought him in. And he's headed to Illinois, to the Midwest, and it's the Chicago White Sox. Like, that's incredible that they felt like they wanted to make the splash. And the projections are always going to be overshot, right? Everyone's always going to overproject. I think because he's Japanese, he's a slugger. He had 56 home runs. He's young, right? There's, of course, red flags. I'm a walking red flag for this show today for you. But his red flags, right? The swing and miss, the in-zone contact rate. Okay. But let's be honest. Like, low risk, very high reward. And the White Sox were willing to give him, it's like $40 million in total with that posting fee. I salute Chris Getz in that entire front office for being the one team to take the flyer on him.
So I was thinking a lot about Yamamoto because when we think about the way that Japanese players are talked about and considered when they come over, for most, and Jordan and I have talked about this on the show before, like, for most of the history of players coming over, they were relatively finished products, right? So, like, you would sign a Yu Darvish and you would be like, oh, there's no development left here. I mean, we can always pull some levers, but he's going to be in the rotation, right? And we have a pretty good idea of what he's going to be. And so teams were more willing to invest in that. When, like, Sasaki last year came over, it was like, this is a full developmental project, but because the price is so low, every team will take a swing at, right? Yamamoto is interesting because he represented like this young player that was available on the open market for as much money as he wanted. And I'm looking at the projection for him now from the going into that winter.
And okay, what was it?
MLB trade rumors had him at 9-225. Okay. And he overshot that by $100 million.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think this tells us a lot. This tells us that the difference between a hitter and a pitcher coming over is so significant, right? That teams just feel more confident projecting how a pitcher is going to perform because you have all that data. And even though Murakami is young, teams just didn't feel comfortable giving out a ton of years for him. And so in the end, he ends up with the White Sox.
I think number one, it's actually really good for the sport that you have a Japanese slugger who's playing in the middle of the country for the Chicago White Sox, who finished in last place last year, right? Like, let's put the cards on the table here. This is kind of insane that this is how it worked out. And number two, the fact that other teams weren't willing to take the risk. Okay, maybe they were more comfortable with the American market, the major league market, right? They could have gone and gotten Ryan O'Hearn. No. Like, there were other guys that you could pay 234, like 2 for $34, that anybody, you could have picked a lot of different guys to go and get them, like, major league ready, know what you're getting into, know the statistics. But what I love about Murakami is that it's team friendly, right? So in 2 years, he's going to hit the market again and still be, what, 28 years young?
Yeah.
Still extremely valuable and appealing to other teams. But now he's going to get a chance to see what it's all about. And you would hope that Chicago gives him all the tools, all the love, all the support. I'm kind of intrigued by the lineup, right? Less to be desired about the pitching staff right now. Still feel like they need some additions there. But the fact that you got a Japanese slugger who can still develop but could go and pump out 30 home runs next year, who knows? Worth the risk. Like, 100% worth the risk. 2 years, he's off your books.
There's no downside in my mind. Like, if he sucks, right, if the bottom falls out, you're going to make some of that money back by selling tickets and for the eyeballs from Japan, for sure.
I agree.
And then he's off your roster in 2 years by the time you're going to go ahead and compete anyway. Like, do we think the White Sox are winning the World Series in 26 or 27?
Absolutely not. Sorry. We don't.
And so if he's amazing, then it's great. Because, so if he's great, you're then showing to all these other players in the world that you're an organization that can make people better.
Absolutely.
I think that's enormous, right? And if it goes wrong, well, then his flaws were too much for any team to overcome. And then he goes back to Japan in 2 years and his career continues. And the White Sox didn't have like a better option at first base, right?
No. No, they absolutely didn't. Like, this was almost like I need you like you need me, right? Like a gentleman's agreement. You're going to make us better even if this doesn't work out. People will still come pay to see you. He seems very friendly and likable and loving. And also, like, he's going to have friends all around the country who he's already played with. Like, it's not like the White Sox have these deep running roots with Japan. They have a couple examples. But this, number one, the pipeline you're so spot on about. I think about Stanford. Stanford and Dave Esker, they went and they brought over Rintaro Sasaki, who could have gone and signed and played in the MPB and been a big superstar in Japan. He took a big risk. He comes and plays college ball. The red flags are real. There is swing and miss. Can he catch up to the velocity? Can he play first base? But he's getting the development here. You're building trust with Japan. You're building trust with younger players. Like, that to me, that's big business in baseball. And for the White Sox to make that move is wildly impressive.
It should fire fans up. James Fagan at Sox Machine, who is my favorite person who writes about the White Sox, kind of touched on this. About, like, the dog catching the car, right? Like, dogs are always chasing after cars and they never get them.
Yeah.
And when the dog, but this dog caught the car. Like, we shouldn't worry about whether the dog can drive. Like, is Munetaka Murakami going to lead the White Sox to the World Series? I don't care. Like, that is missing the whole thing. Like, he's on the White Sox, right? And if you're the organization and if you're a fan of the team, this is an unequivocal good thing, right? This is a plus. This is a positive. Now,
and you're in a division, by the way, that can be won by any team. They were a last place team last year. They were. They just were the worst team in the division. I don't know if I would say that about them this year.
Yeah. I mean, they're still pretty bad, but I don't think Murakami moves the needle right away. I think this is going to take some time because the current swing and approach, and everyone has talked about this, the current swing and approach is not going to work at the major league level. And so adjustments need to be made. Those adjustments are going to be harder to make because, one, he's going to go play in the WBC. So he's going to have sort of a truncated spring training.
Good point. Yeah.
And two, he's going to go right to the big leagues. Like, he's not going to Charlotte or Birmingham to get some swings in, right? Oh, could you imagine? Send him to Winston-Salem or Kannapolis, just going deep against low A, whatever. For those two reasons, he's going to have to make the adjustments at the highest level while adjusting to a new world, a new country, new teammates, all of it. It's going to be hard. And I think it's going to take some time if it ever happens at all. I want to flip back now, Danny, to the question of how did we miss this, right? Because when the industry, like, people are wrong all the time. I'm wrong, you're wrong, whatever. The whole institution of baseball prognostication was so wrong here. And we are usually not all wrong by that much. So when Murakami signed, I started texting scouts and like international directors and evaluators.
Doing your homework.
Like, doing my homework. I was like, what did we miss here? What, like, why didn't you guys tell me, tell any of us that we were wrong?
How rude. Yeah.
You know? Gosh. Like,
what'd they say?
There was kind of two main things. One is that like the hype went above the actual skill set, right? That a lot, I talked to one guy who was like, yeah, as it went down to the deadline, like we checked in and then I was like, I don't know if I even want to sign this guy for 234. Like, I just don't think he's good. I just don't think he's going to hit, right? Evaluators have real doubts about whether he's going to hit. And at the end of the day, that is the biggest thing for any baseball player. If they're not going to hit, you don't want him on your team, right?
So this is why it makes sense, though. This is why it actually makes complete sense that the Chicago White Sox, who are looking at it, they're not looking at it through a lens of will he produce and will he impact our lineup in such a way that will push us to be contenders or a wild card type team. This to me is strictly business. You said it. Butts in seats, eyes on their team, money coming in. They'll get advertising. They'll get dollars that no one else is going to have because they don't have the Japanese slugger. And then if he works out, it is a massive victory for them. And so I think what happens is we often see these guys coming over from Japan who have a lot of allure. And listen, he played 8 seasons in the MVP. Like, it's not like he's 2 years in. He's not a new dude, but he's young. And there, I think it's fair to be concerned about those red flags enough for 29 other teams to be like, we'll take our chances without him.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, it seemed like every team, their stance was, we're out, but with that power at that age, someone's got to be in, right?
Yeah, it's like the little brother. It's like, listen, this doesn't fit me. You can have it.
Right. It's like someone will do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a silent auction where it's like, someone will bid on this. And everyone just assumed that someone else would. And then in the end, no one did, right? No one did. Because if another team had had this level of interest, then the number would have been higher in the years, you know, it would have been a bigger contract. And then the last point I think is worth really harping on is the position stuff.
Yeah.
Third baseman, Munetaka Murakami. No, right? The White Sox have already said that they're moving him to first, that he's a first baseman, right? And I think him playing third in Japan meant that he was, I think, even on like me and Jordan's top 50 free agents, we had him listed as a third baseman, right? Let me see. First base / third base. That's misleading, right? We were unintentionally misleading. This guy is not a third baseman. No team ever believed, even the team that gave him $34 million, ever believed that he was going to be a third baseman. And because the defensive value is zero, effectively, the offensive value has to be positive. If this guy was like a center fielder, teams would be more willing to risk the offensive stuff, right?
Definitely.
But in the end, yes. It was like the bottom here is just so low. And so all of those factors came together and we ended up with, you know, people like us being wrong. It feels good to be wrong sometimes, Danny.
Listen, it's good to take an L. Actually, this is my motto for 2026. It's okay to take an L sometimes. Yeah, we could take an L sometimes. I mean, like, I don't really take that many, but like, you know.
Yeah, no. I get it.
L's are good. L's are good. But it, let's be honest.
Without L's, you're just Danny Wexham. And
exactly. I'm not even a real name. I'm not even a real person. In fact, my full name, Danielle, there's two L's in there. Okay, don't forget my real name. That nobody calls me.
You're 0-3. No W. Oh, no, you have a W. You're 1-3. 1 W, 3 L's. There you go.
Thank God. I think this is a heist. I think Munetaka Murakami and his camp made an absolute steal of a deal, and he gets to come play in the United States. And it's up to him. He'll be motivated to be better and to fix some of those flags, right? The swing and miss, because he'll. Inevitably, if he is, someone else might be like, you know what? Let me try. We could use that and we could put him at DH. We don't need him to play the field. Like, there's only upside for all parties involved. And that's kind of how I view it. And I just think it's good for the game. It's good for the Midwest and the state of Illinois to have a Japanese slugger there.
I think there's really in my mind one loser here.
Tell me.
And I think it's Murakami's agency. I think Excel, Casey Close. Like, they're obviously good at their job. They have, you know, Kyle Tucker, Kyle Schwarber. They know what they're doing. But this is their first main Japanese guy.
Yeah.
And I think whether or not, like, Excel usually keeps things really close to the chest.
They do, yeah.
I don't think that the hype on the public side was because they were pumping this guy up to people like me, right? They weren't.
No.
But when the expectation was here and the reality was significantly lower, and you're the agency and you're going back to Japan to try and get more good players, if I'm a Japanese player, right, and I can choose between Casey Close or I can get Wasserman, right, Joel Wolf, or like these guys who have done this and gotten big players big money, I'm not going with the guy who couldn't get Murakami paid. Now, the reason it's not a loss for Murakami as much in my mind is like, this is a ton of money compared to what he was making in Japan. It's a 2-year deal. If he's good, he signs a big deal in 2 years. If he's bad, he goes back to Japan where he's a legend, right? But for the agency, I think the dynamic is a little bit different and a little bit more complicated, because now, like, you went below expectations. That's a fact, right? Whether or not that's your fault is not really relevant to me. Besides that, White Sox, Murakami, the baseball fans, the Midwest, the Pope, everyone else wins.
Yeah, I see it. I completely hear what you're saying, because they obviously want to bring in new clients and they want to show them the manpower they have and the money that they can provide to their clients and the opportunities. I just wonder what happens in a year, though. Like, they have 2 years, because it's also on them to help make this work, right? They do have 2 years, I think. They have a little bit of a runway to try and turn this around, maybe to look more favorable than it's appearing. Face value, you're 100% right.
If he sucks, if he's awful, then it's kind of a win for them.
Right. This was the best that they could do.
They're like, yeah, we got this guy who, you know, was hitting 130. $34 million guaranteed. And if he's amazing, right, then it's like, oh man, you really should have gotten him paid a little bit more. But then they can have a redo in 2 years. Again, like, for me, upshot, White Sox fans, you should be amped. Like, this is so cool. And I can't wait to see Murakami take a picture with the Pope. Anything else on this, Danny, before we take a break?
No, you covered this corner to corner. You did a wonderful job. Yeah, I'm stoked. I'm stoked that he's staying. Like, it was, by the way, the last detail here is that there was like a few hours left, right? He signed on the day before his posting deadline was up. So, like, this was the 11th hour, and maybe that's why they said, hey, take a flyer on this guy, see what happens. So they made it work, and I'm just excited that he's going to be here.
Me too. I'm excited that you're here, Danny. All right, after the break, we'll go around the league and talk about a bunch of trades that happened over the holiday period. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It's been a minute and a half since we last recorded, so we have a lot of trades to catch up on. Let's go around the league. We'll begin with the Boston Red Sox, who I guess only trade with the St. Louis Cardinals. They have acquired first baseman Wilson Contreras from the Cardinals and $8 million in cash considerations in exchange for pitcher Hunter Dobbins and pitching prospects Yoiker Fajardo and Blake Ita. Just very quickly, these don't seem to be cash considerations. What's the difference between cash considerations and cash?
There's other things that go along with the considerations that might come up. Yeah,
okay.
The extra part of that, not just money.
I'm going to go to the deli and it's like, you guys take cash considerations or do you take card?
It's like a cashier's check.
Yeah. They wrote a cashier's check. That's great. The Cardinals sent a cashier's check and they gave it to Wilson Contreras and they said, can you bring this with you when you show up at spring training? Okay. So upshot here. The Boston Red Sox acquire a really good hitter. Contreras is going to be playing this year at 34. He is still pretty good at hitting. Last year, he posted a 123 OPS plus, went yard 20 times, got on base at a 344 clip. Remember, the Cardinals signed him after the time he spent in Chicago with the Cubs. Really, to have him be the heir apparent, that the next in line to Yadi Molina, and like 2 months into the tenure, they hit him with the LOL JK you don't catch anymore. His transition to first base, though, pretty good. He's a very good defensive first baseman. That's gone well. And he's just going to be the everyday guy over there for the Boston Red Sox. Danny, when you saw this news, what popped into your cranium?
Well, where's Tristan Casas going? Honestly, that was the first thing that came into my mind. And I feel for Tristan Casas, who hasn't been able to stay on the field healthy and has such a large personality and I think is so good for the sport, but we haven't really had a chance to see the full bloom of who he can be. So that was my first thought. My second thought is I love the Craig Breslow era right now in Boston, and he has wheeled and dealed. And the fact that he's built his team on not having to send his biggest and best prospects time and time and time again. Go back to the Garrett Crochet trade from last year. Like, I'm in awe of how he's been able to construct the team. And here's the cliffhanger is that by making a move like this, you still have financial flexibility to bring in an Alex Bregman, bring him back to this ball club, which I think is like a must have. So there was like a three-pronged thought process when I saw the move.
I think it really just depends on Bregman for me. Because if you're adding Contreras and you don't bring Bregman back, you're not a better team than you were last year. If you can get both of them, then you are a better team. I mean, the Red Sox are still in this weird spot where they need to trade an outfielder away, where they have Sedan Rafaela needs to be the everyday center fielder, right? Roman Anthony needs to play every day in one of the corners. And then that means the other corner is going to be Jaron Duran and Willier Abreu. Are you going to just DH one of them, right? Maybe that's the plan. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You're pretty left-handed as it is. Like, I would, and then Masataka Yoshida's just like eating up a spot. He's got two more years and he's not very good. Whatever. Contreras is a good hitter. He's a good hitter.
Strays. Sorry, Masataka.
Sorry, dog.
Kitchen strays over here.
He's not good.
It hasn't worked out. You're right.
It hasn't worked out. Thank you for your kind phrasing. Contreras makes them better, but I think that it remains to be like their offseason grade for me at this point is just, it's just incomplete, right? Like I'm not done with them, if that makes sense.
Well, how many times have we heard Jaren Duran's name raised in trade conversations? Would that solve? I mean, you bring value back. Would that solve the outfield logjam? Still have the opportunity to bring Alex Bregman back? You're making a face like you think that's a bad idea.
For what? To trade him or to keep
him? To trade Jaren Duran.
Well, I would probably trade him. The problem with trading Duran is that the Red Sox are valuing him based upon what he was in 2024. Right, which was like a 7-win player that finished in the top 10 of MVP.
It was amazing. It was a great year.
It was amazing. And other teams are valuing him based upon what he was in 2025, which is a flawed but good outfielder who should be hitting second against righties and eighth or seventh against lefties, right? And I think that that's a gap in the value, and that's why we haven't really seen a lot of movement there. The Red Sox deciding to reinforce their team only through trade and not free agency is very interesting. They're one of just two teams that have yet to sign a big league free agent, right? Now, they've been very active bringing players in, Johan Oviedo, Sonny Gray, now Wilson Contreras, but they've not signed a free agent. Them and the Rockies, right, are the only two teams that haven't signed
anybody. What a category.
What a team. You don't want to be there. You don't want to look to your left and be like, oh, I'm just like the Rockies. So we'll see how their offseason continues. As it pertains to the Cardinals, I think what they're doing is very interesting where they have players that they don't want that are expensive-ish. And they are trading them away alongside money in order to get back better prospects, right?
Yeah.
That's what they did in the Sonny Gray deal. They're going to spend a certain amount of money on the big league roster anyway. It makes more sense to send money along with the trade to get a prospect back than to give Ryan O'Hearn 2 years and then hope you trade him for a prospect. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to spend that money, I think this is a very interesting way to do it. They're not going to be good. Brendan Donovan feels like the next piece. If he also goes to the Red Sox, it would be so funny because they could have just done all of this in one trade.
That would be too boring. Why would we do it all together? Don't forget too, like I think people remember this, but like Heim Bloom was just in Boston. Yeah. Like this is why, right? Similar to what David Stearns is doing with the Mets and the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
this is a connection here. But you want to know what else he's doing? So he's basically like he's trying to find some roots and bring in his guys and his team and guys he wants to build around. But he's also going to give Nolan Gorman a chance. He's going to give guys who are younger a little more chance to see what they really are because it's been a bit unfair, I think, having that logjam. And Nolan Arenado, to me, has to go before Brendan Donovan. Nolan Arenado needs to be traded yesterday to open up some space on that infield to move guys around.
You know the problem about that?
What a face.
You know the problem about that, Danny? He's not that good. Nolan Arenado.
Okay, well.
Nolan Arenado is a legend. He's a legend. He's a future Hall of Famer.
He is a legend. Player. I think the Angels would be interested in him.
He's not that good anymore. Like, he's just not that good. He's just not a great player anymore.
So what if you send cash?
Sure.
You can send cash.
You can send cash. They're going to send cash. Now, okay, you're trading with the Angels. Let's say you send Arenado to the Angels alongside cash. You're going to get all those awesome Angels prospects back? Like,
can you tell me who's on the list?
No, that's kind of my point, is that there's just not a lot there, right? The Angels have one of the worst farm systems in the league. And so, like,
There has to be a couple of arms. There have to be a couple of arms.
Yeah, there are arms there, but like Caden Dana and like George Klassen are guys that like the Angels think are going to help them like now.
Right? Sure.
Like, he's going to be in the... So my point is, it's great to say, oh, that's fit, but you have to get something back. So as far... That's the problem with Arenado, right? Is that he's being paid well beyond what he's worth. Yes,
for sure.
And Arenado is... kind of missed his window here where he should have just okayed a trade last winter when he had the opportunity.
I can't believe I still, you know, I'm back in St. Louis and I have family members who are like, why did he reject the trade? Why? Why? I don't know.
It's so weird,
I
mean, dude.
I think I could surmise a couple of things, but I don't know. I have no substantial
sliding
idea.
Sliding doors moment as it pertains to like Kyle Tucker, right? Like Kyle Tucker going to Chicago in exchange for Isaac Paredes, who ends up being the it's just like, hopefully yes. That becomes this butterfly effect thing with him that we can talk about in years to come. Enough about the Cardinals. So. Let's move to Queens, okay. Where Jeff McNeil becomes the latest member of the New York Mets to be purged, to be sent off the island. Adios, Jeff. The squirrel goes from New York to SacOakland, Vegas, to the Athletics. The Mets are also sending $5.75 million to cover some of the deal. They're going to end up saving about 10-ish with this move. McNeil joining the A's in exchange for a Dominican Summer League pitcher who's from Cuba named Yordan Rodriguez, who is about to turn 18. He threw 15 innings last year in the DSL. He's a lottery ticket. This move is about getting Jeff McNeil off the roster. This is not about Yordan Rodriguez, with all due respect. He is now the fourth Met. I would say last season there were six Mets. They were the Mets. It was Soto, Lindor,
yeah.
Alonso, Diaz, McNeil, Nimmo. Four of those guys don't live there anymore. And that is McNeil, Diaz, Alonso, and Nimmo. They're all gone. McNeil is the one that I think tugs at the heartstrings the least for Mets fans compared to the other three. I think that's not anything against McNeil, but like,
yeah, you could say that.
Quite on the, it, to me, it was like Alonso and Diaz, and then like Nimmo, and then McNeil. I think that is kind of how important these dudes were. This is fascinating. The David Stern, like, here's my question, Danny.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't
Mets
wait
fans were like, Mets fans are not happy right now.
They're not.
Okay. But at the end of the year, if you had told a Mets fan, hey, they're just going to run it all back, they would also not be happy. Right?
Agreed.
Because it didn't work. It was a disaster. It felt like every, you know, Chuck from Massapequa Park was calling in and say, hey, we got to get rid of all these guys. Trade them all. Get rid of all of them. And then they did. And they're still mad. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, they've been through it. You know, I've learned in my 12 years in New York a little bit about the suffering of the Mets fan. The Mets fan. There could be a 30 for 30, I think, on the suffering of the fandom in this organization. And David Stearns has done something that's radical and uncomfortable. And did I think that all of those guys would be gone? No, but I also can understand why he did it. And I know why fans are upset, because there's been a lot of subtractions and there's been a few additions. Yes, Jeff McNeil leaving makes sense because the infield's too crowded. And you have Ronnie Mauricio, who needs a spot. Luis Angel Acuna, who needs a spot. You have Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos. Don't forget, Jet Williams is waiting in the wings, too. Carson, he's infield Benj and outfield. Carson Benj, who's going to be playing in the outfield and going to get a chance out there. You have too many young guys and really good talent. So Jeff had to go. That's not surprising. I was thinking that was going to happen. But the frustration stems from, okay, you tore it down. I can see the bare bones of my childhood home that I grew up in. Like, how are we building this back? And so that's chapter two. And that's what everyone's waiting on, is chapter two.
It's just all about what it looks like now, right?
Totally.
I think the Alonso one is the one that I find the hardest to swallow, because he, I think, kind of does fit with the roster and he is good. And having been around the team, I think that he was not a negative to the culture in there.
I agree.
And that's the one that makes the least sense to me. Not to say that McNeil, like, I don't think, everyone knows that McNeil and Lindor fought about the squirrel. Okay. Everyone knows that McNeil and Lindor don't like each other. That's not a secret, right?
Fought about the squirrel.
McNeil was, my sense is he was like a little bit better this year than he'd been in previous years, where he was
versatile. He showed off a little versatility, which is valuable and desirable.
My point is, like, I'm talking about from like a culture perspective.
Oh, from like a person.
Like, he was a little bit better this year than he had been in years past. But I think that Stearns just wanted to rip this thing up, right?
Yeah,
and
he did.
I get it. Yes. Like, if you, what happened to the Mets at the end of this regular season was a catastrophe. Something was rotten. And in order to fix that, you do need to rip it up, right?
Sage. As painful as it is. Sage the clubhouse.
You got to detox. They needed a detox. Someone That's ripped it. Ass in there, and they needed to open a window and throw the garbage out. And that's what David Stearns.
Maybe it was a member of the staff. Maybe it was a player. They're all gone.
Who dealt it?
Who done it? They're all gone. You won't know. Who done it? Everybody's gone. Literally everyone is gone. And can I say, I kind of feel a little for Carlos Mendoza in all of this, because he has a whole new staff. He's going to have a ton of new players and personalities. And you know something else is coming. And that's let me put a bow on this. That if we said everyone that tugs at your heartstrings and all the jerseys that you own will be irrelevant to you, but they're going to sign a slugger and a bona fide starting pitcher, I think that hearts could be half mended. I think a Band-Aid could be put on and they could feel better. But I have a lot of people commenting on all over my social media about how they don't know if they're going to buy tickets. They can't believe this is happening, to your point. But they also were probably the ones that were like, break it down.
You have Juan Soto still?
Question mark?
Buy that jersey? If you're like, if you're a Mets fan, you're like, man, I don't know what jersey to buy. The 15-year contract guy.
Safe. Well, he does have opt-out.
He does have an opt-out.
Yeah. Don't forget.
1 year closer. All right. Let's do the three-way trade. A three-way trade is great because has there ever been a four-way trade?
I don't know, but I wish there would be. That would be very
30
cool.
ways. Everyone, hand a player to the team to your left. Pirates, Rays, Astros do a three-team trade. The Pirates receive Brandon Lau, Mason Montgomery, a hard-throwing left-handed reliever who's really, really good, and outfielder Jake Mangum, college baseball icon.
Do-do-do-do-do-do!
All three of those players go from the Rays to the Pirates, okay? The Pirates send right-handed pitcher Mike Burrows to the Astros, and the Astros send outfielder Jacob Melton and pitcher Anderson Brito to the Rays. This is a straightforward three-team trade because it is just like all the players are going in a circle. There are some three-team trades where there's like cross-contamination.
Yes,
right,
this
where
is
it's
just
like
a circle.
The Rays are sending this player to there and that player there, and then right, like this is much more straightforward. Let's
it's
fly through
to
this
understand.
One. I think I'll just do the Astros really quickly.
Okay,
this one makes sense. They need pitching. Fromber's probably gone. Burrows is good and he's under control. The Astros, I like this for them. I think this is very simple. Melton and Brito are good prospects. The Astros' existence right now is not about prospects. It is keeping this Altuve era window open as long as possible. At the end of the day, it's as simple as, is Hunter Brown going to be that good again? Is Yordan Alvarez a top five hitter in the world, or does he play 65 baseball games? That's it. You want to take the Rays?
No, you keep going. You've got this.
The Rays one, for me, slots in with the Orioles trade we're going to get to in a second. The 2026 Rays are probably not going to be that good. They are looking pretty – I mean, they'll probably win like 80 games because that's what they do.
They'll probably still win 80 games.
They'll probably still win 80 games with guys we've literally never heard of before.
Yes.
But this and the Boz trade are like them restocking the farm system a little bit, which is what they do all the time.
And Eric Hager said as much. He said that too.
He was honest about it. The Pirates side of this is awesome. Okay?
Yes.
Because the Pittsburgh Pirates are trying to win baseball games right now. And that is new. That is cute. I just want to pinch Ben Charrington's cheeks.
So cute.
That is something I can... His face. Can you imagine Ben Charrington? Like, I see him at it's spring. I just want to, I like, he's like, dude, do not touch
and
my
then the
face.
The security comes and you're face down on the ground.
Paul Skeens is enormous security guy. You know that guy? The big guy? That guy and I, we dap each other up. He's like, hey, good to see you. I'm like, good to see you. You're huge. Pirates getting Brandon Lau. He's going to be their everyday second baseman. Provide a boost of power to a team that finished dead last in basically every power category in baseball last year. Mangum will be a fourth outfielder, spark plug type. I think right now he would probably start in left field. I think he fits better as your fourth outfielder. And then Mason Montgomery is one of the few left-handed pitchers in the world that throw 100. Like, everyone throws 100 now, but it's still rare for a lefty to do it. And he does it, and he's really good. He's only 25. His ceiling is top five reliever in the world. Mason Montgomery, the stuff is that good. And he's under control for a long time. The Pirates' pen was not that good. Love this for them, even though Brandon Lau is going to hit free agency soon. This is a win for them. I really love it. And they're trading from their depth of starting pitching. Their rotation is still really good with Skeens Keller, Braxton Ashcraft, Bubba Chandler, and Carmen Lazinski. That's always fun. And Jerry Jones on the aisle. Like,
don't forget Jerry Jones. Good. Yeah.
Go Pirates. Anything about the three-way trade, Danny Wicks?
I mean, I think the Tampa Bay Rays are one of the smartest, if not the smartest teams in the league, just like intelligence-wise. And they did have to give up some mainstays to get those prospects. So I'm excited to see what they do this year. 2027 will be intriguing. But I want to give like a big ol' smooch to the Pirates because I feel like I've been screaming from the top of my lungs to support that pitching staff. They were sixth in ERA last season. This is a top 10, top five pitching staff in the league because of Paul Skeens. And they finally answered the bell and brought in some offense. And will I be watching not just every fifth day to see Paul Skeens pitch for the Pirates? Yeah, I will be watching this team play baseball next year.
I'll be watching the part of the inning where they hit instead of the part of the inning where they pitch.
Exactly.
Last big deal over the last week was the Orioles acquiring Shane Boz, a person who people think I look like.
Huh.
I don't agree. As much as I like Shane and think he's a handsome young man, I just think we look like different people. He goes from the Rays to the Orioles in exchange for a cornucopia
of
prospects.
Yes.
Going the other way, outfielder Slater DeBrun, who was drafted this past year. Catcher Caden Bodine, drafted this past year. Right-handed pitcher Michael Ferrey, outfielder Austin Overn, and a competitive balance round A draft pick. So that'll be like in the 30s this upcoming year and is particularly relevant for the Rays because they got the second pick in the draft. They'll have a huge bonus pool. They can kind of move a lot more money around. That is not a small part of this deal. Let's focus on DeBrun and Bodine, who are the two big names coming back. Danny, I assume you have seen both of these individuals play a lot of baseball. What can you tell people about DeBrun and Bodine?
Okay, well, let's start with Slater DeBrun. So drafted out of high school, smaller in stature, so to speak, but a lot of power. He is, I would say, height-wise, I think there's emphasis on the height, but I feel like we should pull away from that. And the thing about him is I would say in this last year, his junior to senior year of high school, he caught a lot of attention. Bat to ball skills, some pop in that bat. It's not sneaky pop. I hate that phrase. I think that's a lazy way to say that a guy knows how to hit the baseball hard and is aware of his body and his angles, which he is. He's very smart. He's musically inclined. He's in a band, Lil Sway. Well, yes, I'm going to say he is. I'm going to err on the side that he is because I spent a lot of time with him. High EQ, high baseball IQ. And this is a guy that if you give him a chance to succeed, which I love the fact that he's going to be with the Rays, I do think that there's a chance he could be an everyday type player. He's not going to blow you away, but I do think he can be a really solid big leaguer.
Okay. Bodine.
Caden Bodine.
I fell in love with Caden Bodine. At the College World Series this past year. He was the starting catcher for Coastal Carolina, switch hitter. It is as advanced a defensive profile from a backstop as you will ever really see at the college level. He could, I believe, catch in the big leagues right now. He could have caught in the big leagues like a year ago. Like, he's that good. The bat, there's a lot more questions there about the power. Makes a ton of contact from both sides of the plate. didn't really drive the ball a whole lot in college baseball this year, which is the last couple of years, which is relevant because everyone else in the sport was, because the ball was flying. But Bodine wasn't doing that. And so you're projecting on the power, but you love the defensive floor. And for the Rays, a team that has had this bizarre carousel of catchers, like they have had more catchers, I think, in the last 5 to 10 years than like any team in baseball. And
can you name them all?
It's funny you say that. A friend and I tried this recently, and I can do most of them, but I'm not going to bore people on the podcast. Bodine is great. I think this is a really good pickup for the Rays. Let's do Shane Baz now before we take a break. The Orioles are doing stuff, dude. Like, they are being active. They are taking the initiative. I give them a lot of credit for that. Their underwhelming offseason last winter feels like a thing of the past. Baz has 3 years of control left. This was a big price to pay to get him. They're not acquiring what Shane Baz has been. They are acquiring what they think Shane Baz can be, which is a very talented number two pitcher in a good team's rotation.
Yeah, I am a huge fan of Shane Baz. Like, not only is the profile of what he can do with a baseball really impressive, and that's obviously why the Tampa Bay Rays loved him so much, but the Rays are going to raise. And so they send him up to Baltimore. And for Mike Elias to put his money where his mouth is, the new ownership group to start to figure some things out. I know that they didn't pay money, but I think that front office has kept their prospects so close to them, right? They have almost been unwilling, I feel like, to move guys so early. The fact that they just drafted Bodine and DeBrun, right, and gave them up a year later, less than a year later, is a huge deal to me. And now you have a bona fide guy in your rotation in the American League East, which he is familiar with already, and I think is going to be a superstar in Baltimore. I am so stoked for this.
The two biggest question marks about general manager Mike Elias, I guess he's the president of baseball operations now.
Pobo.
Of president of baseball operations, Mike Elias, heading into this winter was, is he going to spend money on a free agent? Is he going to break the bank for someone? And two, is he going to be willing to part with a lot of good prospects to acquire a good big leaguer? It is December 26th. He has done both of those things already.
I have been
very critical of Elias over the last couple of years. I think he has been too passive.
Me too. Yeah.
Even though what he has done with the farm system is really impressive, I think he has been too passive. He is changing that narrative with his behavior and his activity this winter. Give him a lot of credit for that. I think this is a good swing to take. The system is still good.
They're going to be a nightmare. They're going to be a nightmare because they weren't a last place team last year.
The Orioles?
And that lineup is going to be an absolute nightmare for everybody else they have to face. I really do feel that way, that this is the year that they're going to come into their own, especially with that pitching staff. That's how I feel about their team.
I hope I don't have nightmares about them myself. Let's take a break. We have four signings to get to, and then we'll do a very brief good, bad, and ugly before we send you on your way on this delightful Boxing Day morning. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Danielle Wexelman and Jacob Mintz hosting this episode. Before we say goodbye and do good, bad, ugly, let's go turbo mode through some of the signings that happened over the last week.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
The A's extend Tyler Soderstrom, left fielder, 7 years, $86 million. The largest contract in team history. Congratulations to Big Money Bags John Fisher, I guess. This contract buys out 3 free agent years for Soderstrom. There are some options tacked on at the end. It is just the latest extension for this franchise that signed Brent Rooker and Lawrence Butler, locked both of them up. They now have a number of interesting young hitters under contract as they get ready to move to Vegas in 2028. Nick Kurtz Is he next? Jacob Wilson, shortstop. Is he next? Shaylen Galeers behind the plate. Like, there are some really fun hitters here. And I have to say, Kurtz and Wilson, specifically, kind of overshadowed Soderstrom last year. This guy was way better than I realized.
Dude, this is amazing. The Athletics are giving people a reason to watch. And don't be surprised if we're watching postseason games in a minor league ballpark next year.
Soderstrom was a four-win player with a 126 OPS place, OPS plus. He hit 25 homers. He just turned 24. I was not a believer. I'm going to be honest. I was very low, and I will am willing to admit I was wrong. The biggest thing that happened last year with Soderstrom is that he proved he could play a corner outfield spot, right? So he came up as a catcher and a first baseman. The A's had Shea Langelier as a catcher, and they have Nick Kurtz at first base, and they have Brent Rooker DHing. And so it was like, Soderstrom, you need to prove you can play the outfield. He did that. He was average to slightly above out there. Love that
athletic.
For him.
He's athletic. Yeah.
Literally. The most interesting part about this move and the way that the A's are acting is that it is definitively different than they were acting in Oakland. They never did this with Chapman or Olsen or Donaldson or all of those players. There were a couple where they did, but like not to this extent. Now, whether that change in behavior is because the sport has changed and teams are now more willing to lock up younger players, or because the Vegas windfall is coming and they want to have a set roster to get fans there excited, I don't know.
Probably a little of all of that.
Probably both. For all of the disgusting, shameful behavior that occurred on the way out of Oakland, which we must continue to bring up, this is a, like this behavior needs to be evaluated separately in a way. If I'm an Oakland A's fan, I'm infuriated. It's like, why didn't you do this before? But if I'm a Sac A's, Vegas A's, other towns A's fan, this is a good thing, and I'm excited about where the franchise is headed.
I'm frustrated if I'm an Oakland A's fan, of course, but I also feel like it's fair to look at it like, but look what is happening now. And like this team, for better or worse, is going to take a ton of talent into Vegas. And that's good for the game. That's good for this team. That's good for the organization.
Sure. I mean, there's like an element of Schadenfreude. Like, I want to see my enemies struggle element of like wanting the A's to go to Vegas and like look stupid and be horrible.
Well, they're already looking a little silly because they're playing in a minor league ballpark.
That's true.
In West Sacramento. Like, to me, you know who suffers the most is the players who show up to work every day to play in a minor league park. So I feel like it is kind of karma right there, and that should feel enough for fans who are frustrated.
The San Diego Padres bring back Michael King.
Yeah.
A 3-year, $75 million deal.
Love it.
King was unbelievable in 2024. His start against the Braves in that postseason series was as dominant as we really, honestly, like, go watch that back. His stuff was cuckoo that evening against Atlanta. Kind of had some injuries that kept him off the field in 2025. He returns to San Diego on a very interesting deal. My question is, where did they find this money? The Padres acting like paupers.
They were donating their plasma. They donated plasma.
Donating kidneys to try and keep Michael King around. The one notable thing about this deal is that it is pretty backloaded, $17 million this year, and then it pumps up to $28 million. He has options, so he can opt out after.
Which I love. Loved this. I love him back in San Diego because you know he's going to eventually go back east, but they need him.
The most likely thing, I mean, one of two things will happen, right? King will stay healthy. He'll pitch well. He'll opt out. He'll hit the market again next winter, and the Padres get sort of a stopgap starting option. Or he's bad, and for him, he just opts into $28 million in 27-28, which is it's a good bit of business. But the Padres just needed someone to pitch for them this year.
Yeah.
And King was as good of a choice as any. Miami Marlins, this was, I believe, yesterday on Critmit, or maybe Critmit Eve.
On the eve. It was on the eve.
On air of Christmas. The Marlins signing Pete Fairbanks to a 1-year, $13 million deal. Huh?
Hell yeah. Huh? Let's go. Let's go, make Miami. Peter Bendix. Like, first of all, this is amazing. He's staying in Florida. He's going to get a chance to be a part of a team that I think is going to turn things upside down in the National League East, especially if they don't give away their big three pitchers, Sandy, Yuri, and Edward. That's what I'm calling them. I love this. I'm obsessed with this. And I also will be watching more Marlins games this year. This is a huge deal.
Sure. They need hitters. This is cool. I think the Marlins are skilled at preventing runs. Their bullpen was better than you think. Paying money for baseball players.
So I'll be watching when they pitch. Yeah, I'll be watching when they're in the field.
They have interesting hitters, but I the Marlins just pay someone to hit.
Pay anyone.
Pay anyone to hit for you.
Pay him.
Please. Pay who? Pay me? Don't pay me. Like... I would have loved to see them get like Jorge Polanco, right?
Could they trade with the Cardinals? Could they make a trade with the
Everyone
Cardinals?
Everyone can. Our last signing is the Pittsburgh Pirates bringing in Ryan O'Hearn for 2 years and $29 million. Danny, this is the largest position player free agent contract ever given out by the Pittsburgh Pirates. Wow. O'Hearn rejuvenated his career a few seasons ago with the Orioles. He cashes in here. The Pirates, I'm happy that they went and got O'Hearn instead of Murakami because I think they needed more of a sure thing in their lineup than a big swing like Murakami. They could still use another bat. Their lineup, which was like the worst in the league last year, has gone from embarrassing to competent, but it is not yet good. It's not quite at good level. They should go get Kazuma Okamoto to play third base, and then I would be like, they're fine.
Okay.
Again, I think when this happens, we forget how many good lineups there are, right? Like, oh, just because we're like, oh, the Pirates are, they're not like anywhere close to like the best teams, right?
It's because the standard's so low for them.
The standard's so low for them.
So low.
But the standard in baseball is so high. Right?
Yes.
And like Spencer Horwitz, Brandon Lau, Brian Reynolds, Ryan O'Hearn, Nick Gonzalez, O'Neill Cruz, Jared Triolo, Joey Bart, Jake Mangum is better than it was, but like,
yes,
that's probably not winning the World Series. Pirates, keep on doing it though. Keep going. Please keep going.
We love it.
Yeah. Before we say goodbye, Danny, let's do the good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing that reminded us of Dan Ugla this week.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you start it off, Danny? What's good in your life? You have a little show and tell, I believe?
Oh, yes, I do. Okay. This, I'm back home in St. Louis, and this is my most prized possession that I own. Okay. So, as you can see, that Cardinals player is Dan Musial, and that kid is my dad, and my dad was at spring training, and somebody snapped this photo. And look, he's wearing like a big windbreaker under his uniform, and he's got his stirrups, and my dad has his chucks on. And this is my most prized possession. And literally, like, if there's a fire, it's the first thing that comes with me, truly.
What's the backstory? Like, how did he end up on the field?
I think my dad's friend... That kid's dad, this is my Uncle Robbie telling me, that kid's dad took them down to spring training and he knew some guys. And so he got on the field and got to take this photo. There's a couple other photos too from spring training, but this is the best one.
Oh, yeah.
That I think anyway.
I saw that photo and my first thought was getting a picture with an athlete before cell phones or really before like handheld cameras must have been such an ordeal because like it just took longer, dude. You know?
Yeah. Everyone's like, okay, we're not ready yet. Stan, hold on. You can keep throwing.
Getting a photo with a celebrity in, 1896. It's like, hey, you can't move for 5 seconds and I need this big crank wheel and a button.
It's so cool. He's got his arm around my dad's shoulder. Like, it's very cool. So that's my good. What's your good? What do you got?
For those of you who listen to the show all the time, you know that Jake Mintz and Jordan Schusterman a couple months ago were desperate for fandom. Having sunk deep into the world of evaluating baseball, we missed cheering irrationally for sports teams. And so we set out on a search to pick a team to cheer for, and we selected the Buffalo Sabres of the National Hockey League. And the Buffalo Sabres are on a W7. They are the most tortured NHL fan base. They have not been to the playoffs since like 2007, I believe, and have been horrible the whole time. And they're cooking right now. And Jordan and I are in it, and we're watching like every game. And it could not have turned out better than this. The Sabres winning on a huge OT goal in their last game before they have a Christmas break, I learned, in hockey.
Yes, they beat
the Senators on the road in overtime. Love that for me. But my specific baseball-related good is right before Christmas, the Sabres went into New Jersey to the Prudential Center to play the Devils for Jack Hughes's first game back. Jack Hughes, I think he's like dating Tate McRae. Big deal.
Something like that, yeah.
And who showed up to this game? But Livy Don and Paul Skeens rolling up to the Prudential Center to take in some Sabres hockey. They're Devil. Livy Don's like an actual Devils fan.
She's from New Jersey. Yeah.
And guess what? The Devils ruined their night by losing to the Sabres, baby. Let's go, Buffalo. I am so jazzed about this, and I can't wait to talk to Paul Skeens about this in spring training and chat about Josh Norris and Noah Ostlund and how Luka Pekka Luukkonen looks in net for the Sabres. So that's my
I truly love it. I fully support. And I feel like you guys should get to a game. Like, let's put a bow on.
We're gonna drive and meet in Buffalo.
You kind of have to, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
What's bad?
I love you, Munetaka Murakami, and I'm so excited that you'll be playing Major League Baseball. But your sock bit fell flat. And whoever,
what was the sock bit?
He pulled out some white socks
during the presser.
At his press conference. And whoever told you it was a good idea is a bad person. So that is my bad. That's a bad person. That's a bad friend. That's a bad friend that allowed you to do a white sock bit at the press conference for the White Sox. That's a bad friend.
I'm going to pull it back. Maybe not bad advice. I don't know if they're a bad person.
Bad person.
Bad person.
Just a bad person.
So this was very odd. He goes, like, let's go White Sox. And he pulls the sock, I think it was like in the sleeve of his coat. And he holds it aloft like a wrestling belt. He's like go White Sox.
A medal. It was horrible. It was horrible. And I didn't like the bit. And I just think that someone who gives you advice like that should be questioned. Okay?
Yeah.
Careful who you befriend, Munetaka. Just be careful.
Yeah. Just check back in with who – if that was your idea, let's bounce our ideas off people.
Let's double check.
Look. Do you know how many bad ideas I've had over the years? Many.
I couldn't count. It would take me years.
That's why Jordan Schusterman is a valuable part of the community. my bad, generally, is Christmas presents that don't age well.
Yes. Keep going.
This is a tweet from @RangersNation. It is a child weeping under the Christmas tree. Like, absolutely weeping. Maybe this is AI. I don't even know. Like, this could totally be AI now.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is. It is a weeping child, a Rangers fan, holding up a Adolis Garcia and Marcus Semien jersey. Two players who are no longer on the Rangers. Just crying his eyes out.
I mean, there was a Mets fan who got an Alonso jersey. So the trend was pretty heavy this year. Parents, we got to be a little better than that.
Well, let's just check the transaction log. Again, if the Alonso jersey is kind of – the Alonso jersey is unforgivable because you know he's hitting free agency and there are other options.
Scarring.
Not losing Lindor or Soto. Just get the kid a Lindor or Soto jersey. As a Rangers fan, you would probably heading into the winter, like, oh, I could get my kid a Marcus Semien jersey. I'm fine. You know?
Sure.
Like, that sure. felt pretty good.
Fair.
I think Fair. Most ball knowers knew Adolis was a non-tender candidate. But again, having to explain, like, the non-tender deadline to a parent. Like, a
maybe it was on sale. They were, like, 2-for-1.
Probably was on sale. You two can get these on sale. Like, the jerseys of the dudes who get traded away are cheaper.
It so makes maybe, me sad, actually. It makes me really sad for them. Like, I would hate to walk into a store and see my jersey on sale. Like, wouldn't that be really sad?
Yeah. At least your jersey was being sold. All right, Danny, what's Ugla for you?
Yes. Okay. Weird, wild, crazy in the college sports world, college baseball especially. That's where we're headed here. Penn State, Mike Gambino signing and bringing over Jinai Sato. I'm really hoping that's how you pronounce that name. He was a third-year student over in Japan and is coming to the United States to play college baseball at Penn State. Penn State luring him in, okay? They have other Japanese athletes. Yes, I see you. They have other Japanese athletes, a wrestler in particular, who in my reporting, helped recruit Sato. And this is a huge deal for Penn State. This is wild that he's going to Penn State. But go Mike Gambino. Go Nittany Lions. Like, yeah.
So my favorite part of this is the connection to the athletes that were already there. So yes. you tweeted this out, but I'm reading directly from a friend of the program, Bradley Smart, over at
G1Baseball.com. Yes. We love.
Penn State felt uniquely positioned to make a pitch to Sato thanks to his countryman, Masanosuke Ono, a gold medal winning wrestler at the 2024 World Championships in Albania. Ono committed to Penn State in late March to learn and compete in folk-style wrestling for the Nittany Lions. That I read that sentence, that I said the word Albania and folk-style wrestling in connection with a college baseball program securing the services of a Japanese college student, that is Ugla as it gets. That's as Ugla as it gets.
Did you follow it? But here, wait, real quick. We're not going to get to see him play until next year. Not playing baseball for 2026. He's playing for 2027.
Okay. Sure. Like, Penn State caring about baseball is a good thing, but them getting a leg up in this historic signing because a dude just was kicking wrestling butt in Albania, knew this guy. Like, the world is a weird place. Speaking of weird places, I will finish up.
Okay.
Hunter Green, one of the best players, best pitchers in the league.
Definitely.
Tweeted a picture. Merry Christmas from ours to yours. It is a very sweet picture of him with his family there on a hike somewhere in the Southwest. And Hunter Green is holding a hiking stick. And I would like to overanalyze this hiking stick.
Okay.
So for those of you who have ever been on a hike, which is, I assume, most of you, the hiking stick, getting a sick stick, getting a cool ass stick on your hike as a, you know, pea-brained man is one of the highlights of going on a hike, is finding a great stick. And so as far as that goes, I relate to Hunter Green and his stick. However, I think that this stick, cool as it may have looked on first glance, is not actually a great hiking stick. Those of you watching on YouTube, you could see the stick. Those of you listening, just go to Hunter Green's Twitter. You can see the stick. A couple different things here about the stick. It's too tall. The stick is too long. It's too tall, this stick. The stick is basically as tall as Hunter Green, and he is very tall. You want a stick that's a little bit shorter than that when you're hiking. Hiking poles don't go to your head, right?
Right.
They go lower than that. You want a slightly shorter stick. The other thing I see about this stick is very splinter prone. It's not exactly a smooth stick. There's a lot of bark on it with many branches kind of coming off of the stick. And then my last point is that the stick is thicker at the top than it is at the bottom. And I would probably want the opposite to be true with a hiking stick. So Hunter Green, your hiking stick gets a C+ from me. I love that you're a hiking stick guy. However, I believe this is your sister on the far end of this. Her hiking stick gets an F. It is far too flimsy and feeble. This hiking stick, this is just kind of an eyewash hiking stick. You can't really put much weight on that stick. It's not actually going to help you. Happy holidays to the whole Green family.
Your sticks stink.
No, I think there's room to improve here on the hiking stick.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Room for improvement. Well, maybe they'll go on another pass.
Email.
Maybe they'll listen. They'll listen. And yeah.
Hunter Green is a very smart guy. He's very open to feedback. And I don't think Hunter would appreciate if I, you know, misled him and said, Hunter, this is an amazing stick. This is the greatest stick of all time. It's an A+
stick. Do you think he knew you were going to analyze his stick?
I think when Hunter Green tweeted this picture out, he didn't think that anybody was going to talk about it at all. And Hunter, who's a very good dude, would be very weirded out by me spending 5 minutes talking about his hiking stick. But again, I am 30. I'm a man. I love finding a stick in the woods. Okay, this is up my alley too.
It's relatable.
I just think that there's room to improve. What do you think of Hunter Green's hiking stick? Email us. BaseballBarbaCast, that's BARBcast @gmail.com. Danny Wex, thank you for joining us on this delightful episode. Thank you to Ingrid Rosas and Andrew Hartz to producing. Thank you to you, the fans, for listening. I hope you had a very merry Nabil Krismat. We will be back on Tuesday, I believe, with Jordan Schusterman. Danny, anything you'd like to get off your chest before we say goodbye?
May all your sticks be better than Hunter Green's. Yeah, good luck in your stick finding.
It's not that it's a bad stick. It's just that it could have been a better stick. Hunter Green, send me your address. I'll send you a better stick for Christmas. Bye.